2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
This is KSL Outdoors,
brought to you by Trax Power Sports Rentals.
2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure.
KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes
on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Here we go, hour number two, and it's nice to have you listening on another Saturday morning. Tim Hughes in my home studio, actually, this week, and I guess for the foreseeable future we'll be doing it this way.
I'm trying not to make a mess of it.
That's not true. What you said when you walked in is you said, my gosh, your studio's starting to look like my shop.
Those of our listeners have been in my shop. I used to apologize for it. Now it's kind of a neighborhood attraction.
Well, I've gone through this process where I look at stuff. I told you this. I cleaned the counter over there off last week because I started asking myself, when I'm gone, are my kids going to want any of this, or are they just going to grunt, groan, and complain? And if I'm not using it at the moment, there's really no reason to have it stacked up on the counter.
I think a lot of us are in that boat, you know, so to speak, and we got a lot of stuff that was important to us. We thought, boy, my kids are going to love to have that.
Yeah,
you know, that was my favorite jacket. Boy,
yeah,
they'll like having that. Nah, none of that crap. They don't care.
You said we're all in the same boat. If we were in a boat, I wouldn't have enough room to store all this crap.
We'd be swimming outside.
All right, let's talk about what's coming up in this hour. Looking forward to connecting with Bob Grove and Mark Wade. We'll see where they want to take us road tripping today. You'll find them always at Road Tripping with Bob and Mark.com. Bob's also going to stick around and recap his experience at Lake Powell, which I'm anxious to hear. Mm-hmm. We know the water's low. We know it's dangerously low in some places, but his description of it, his photos that he's posted on social media, still tell you that it's going to be an experience like no other that you've probably had in your lifetime. And as long as you know where you can put your boat in or where you can access a houseboat, which they did. And I can't wait to hear his feelings on the cathedral in the desert, something we were lucky enough to see years ago.
And nothing has slowed down at the lake. I send just as many phones to the lake as I have every year.
I'm sure.
You know, so.
And then you've got our camp spot of the week, right?
Yeah, Hiram Reservoir.
Going to go to Hiram Reservoir. First of all, starting off this hour, I want to bring Trina Hedrick. I'm sorry, Trina. I did it. Right off the top, I did it. Trina Hedrick is the Northeast Region Aquatics Manager for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming on with us today to talk about what can be sort of a sensitive topic. And I warned you ahead of time that I peeked at your Facebook page, your social media, and you're taking a pretty good hit, which I guess happens anytime you have a rotenone treatment. And we'll get into that coming up in a second. But just explain to our listeners what it is that's coming in the next several weeks.
Yeah, sure. So in the next 2 weeks, like you said, we're going to be up in the high country, the north slope of the Uintas, and we will be doing some rotenone treatments in the Carter Creek drainage. We'll finish the East Fork Carter treatment that we've been working on the last 2 years. This will be the third and final year. And we will start the West Fork Carter Creek drainage rotenone treatments. And it's basically everything, all the stream length above the Sheep Creek Canal, nothing below it, and then a couple of the lakes. And it's basically removing brook trout, and it's an effort to restore Colorado River cutthroat trout to those drainages. In the end, we'll go down the South Fork of Sheep Creek and finish up with the North Fork and the Middle Fork. And the Sheep Creek Canal is going to connect a lot of that, and we'll have what's called a metapopulation, Colorado River cutthroat trout. So that's our are native species, and it will be very resilient. And by that, I just mean that with all that connectivity and all those populations that can move back and forth, that population, that metapopulation, should persist for a really long time, even, you know, if we have a wildfire or something like that in one of the drainages. So that's like, it's like the gold standard for trying to do restoration treatment. So it's really exciting. And yeah, we are really excited to get this phase done and underway. And that's what we'll be doing the next couple of weeks.
I should have mentioned that our fishing guy, Mike Navidovskis, really wanted to be a part of this conversation. Unfortunately, in our current configuration with me working from home due to, you know, some increases in the case counts of COVID, I can only have one call at a time. But let me ask a couple of questions that I've seen people ask. First of all, anytime we talk about rotenone, and we should preface this by saying there are many success stories of rotenone treatments, strawberry among them, in the state of Utah. How do you keep the rotenone from going places you don't want it to go?
Right. So we have a chemical called potassium permanganate that oxidizes the rotenone. So say, for example, in this West Fork treatment, we will have a potassium permanganate station at the very bottom, and we will drip that chemical into the water, and it just oxidizes the rotenone. And so about, we call it a 30-minute station, right? So it depends on the flow. It's not like a set distance. It's a time travel, you know, a time increment. 30 minutes downstream of that station, the rotenone will no longer be active. It will have been oxidized into, you know, a form that's no longer going to harm fish.
There are people out there that love the brookies, and they always wonder why we're favoring one species over another. What do you say to that?
Well, I would say that it's not really favoring overall. If you look at, like, say, my stocking quota for the region, we stock, like, this year we've stocked 80,000 pounds of brook trout, and those are all fingerling fish. Mostly those get aerially stocked. So we still have brook trout in a lot of places. What we're trying to do with these rotenone treatments is to bring back the Colorado River cutthroat trout in, you know, our native trout species, the only one we have in the upper Colorado, to the point where we don't have to worry about them blinking out, right? So we've gotten together with the different states in the upper basin and the Fish and Wildlife Service and some of these land management agencies like the Forest Service, and we've said we can do XYZ to improve the state of this species. And so let's all work together. We basically picked the North Slope. We've got, you know, this metapopulation that we're talking about today, and then three drainages on the South Slope. And they're small drainages, right? It's not the whole Lake Fork River. It's a very small, one small drainage in the Lake Fork River. Oh, wait, for example. So, you know, we just picked these finite areas where we think we can be successful. And those are the areas that we're going to restore back to Colorado River cutthroat trout and eradicate the brook trout. There are still hundreds of lakes in the high Uintas and maybe thousands of miles of stream that will have brook trout.
With that in mind, some of the people on your Facebook are saying, look, they see it as a waste of time and resources because those brooks are still going to come back. Is the hope that you can get the population of the cuts healthy enough that they will control the population of the brooks?
No, it's not quite like that. Basically, we pick areas that have really good, solid barriers. So, for example, Reeder Creek, if you go down down Reeder Creek, which is a White Rocks drainage towards the White Rocks River, there is a very large waterfall. It's super sketch. I've tried to go up and down it. And fish do not get above that. So as long as humans don't move brook trout back into Reeder Creek, brook trout will not be able to get there on their own.
All right.
So that's the kind of places that we pick, right? We pick somewhere that has a barrier, which is why the metapopulation is so great, because that barrier is way downstream in this instance, right? So
We've only got about 90 seconds left here. So the restocking is going to take place fairly quickly, it looks like.
Yeah, so East Fork will be able to move fish in this later on this fall, just because, well, no, it won't be this fall. I mean, next year, that'll be, because this is the last year of East Fork. West Fork, because we've got to do a couple of years, we'll only be restocking the lakes, but we will restock the lakes next year with our aerial stocking. So, yeah, we do try to get fish back in as soon as we can. Anytime we can transfer fish from a nearby drainage, that's also helpful, because then those fish go in at a larger size, not just the 2 to 3 inches, you know, from the hatchery. So,
yeah. And finally, any advice or things that hikers in the area need to know? Certainly fishermen want to stay out of that area.
Yeah. So I would say out of the East Fork drainage for fishing purposes for probably another year. Some of those lakes did get restocked last year. So, but it just takes time for fish numbers and sizes to come back. West Fork is, it's going to take a little while. And also while we're doing the treatment, that area above the Sheep Creek Canal is closed. So it, any, like, it's 20 feet on either side of the stream, basically. So, so I guess that's something to consider for hunting purposes. You can hike up above the Sheep Creek Canal. You can still go in there, but I wouldn't plan on fishing. And definitely stay away from Ram, Mutton, Bummer Lakes, and then all of the stream sections of the West Fork. Right. We're required to close it down during the treatment.
Good stuff. Not a small project.
No, it's a big deal.
We should mention here, too, that without intervention, biologists really predict that those brook trout populations would completely replace the cutthroat trout in those areas in less than 20 years. So
that's what we've seen. You know, brook trout are just really good at doing what they do and being really aggressive. It's funny that they're in their native range. They're actually threatened and not doing so well. It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, Trina, thanks so much for your time. It helps to explain that, and hopefully we'll calm down some of the rhetoric going back and forth on social media right now.
Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Trina Hedrick is the Northeast Region Aquatics Manager for the Division of Wildlife Resources. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll go road tripping. Bob.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
2, 3, 4. Hey, what do you say we hit the road and go road tripping with Bob and Mark this week?
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Now, we know that Bob was on the road. He was down at Lake Powell, and we're looking forward to hearing all those experiences. But I want to bring Mark Wade in and Bob Grove. We've actually merged a call for the first time. We're conference calling on my phone. I'll have you know I've had an iPhone in my pocket for years and never tried this. So fingers crossed. How did I do? Are you both there?
Neither one of you.
Messing
with us.
sound off, Mark, if you're there.
I'm here. How about Bob?
And Bob, are you there? Oh, tell me we lost Bob.
I just messing with you.
Yeah, well, you're messing with me all right. Attaboy. You caused me a heart attack on this end. We'll get to your overall experience at Lake Powell coming up after we take a news break on the half hour. But in this shorter segment, Mark, you sent me an email that Bob had made a little side trip to the Hole in the Rock, so you wanted to kind of explore the Hole in the Rock Road. Tell us where that's at, Bob.
Well, it's the road that you would take to go down to Hole in the Rock is east of Escalante, what is it, Mark, about less than 10 miles, I think, from Escalante that heads south. I think about 70 miles it gets down there, and Mark's going to talk about some of the places along the way, but that's where you would enter, is just off of Highway 12 east of Escalante.
There's quite a bit of history attached to this too, Mark.
Well, there is. You know, back in about 1880, the winter of 1880, Brigham Young got about 100 wagons together and pioneers, mostly from southwestern Utah, and asked them to go settle southeastern Utah. And so the people came over the mountain to Escalante, as Bob was saying, and then they made this 70-mile trek down the Hole in the Rock Road to Lake Powell as it is today, right on the Colorado River. And they had to, at this one spot, they had to make a hole in the rock to get their wagons down across the river.
Ah.
It's an amazing thing.
Have you done this?
Oh, twice.
Okay.
Yeah. And let me warn our listeners, if you're going to drive that, get like a football mouthpiece so that your dental work will stay intact. That is one bad road.
Well, once you get on it, how far does it go?
50 miles.
Well, all the way down to the bottom from Highway 12 down to the hole in the rock itself, I think it's about 70 miles.
Oh, really? Wow.
But, yeah. But like Russ said, it is a washboarded road. I've actually seen people, you know, you see this all the time during the tourist season, people with rental vehicles go on that road, and it looks like the axles are going to fall off. You know, it's a pretty rough road, so be prepared.
But I'm going to say, they grade that road. You just got to know when.
So
if you got an in with that county's road department, that would be a call to make, because
yeah, you find out what they're blading it.
Yeah.
Other than the hole itself, Mark, what other things would you likely see if you make that drive?
Well, you've got a huge number of slot canyons off to the northeast side of that road. On the southwest side of the road, you've got the Kaparowitz Plateau going all the way down the length of that road. But the slot canyons on the north, everyone goes in there for those slot canyons. There's also Devil's Garden. Yeah. And a couple of slot canyons that people get to very easily are Peekaboo and Spooky, just not too far down the road.
You know, the one of my favorite spots is to go to Egypt and go all the way to the end. Now, there used to be nobody there, but now it's packed. But you can have that overlook of the Escalante drainage down there. It's just a beautiful spot. The other thing on the west side of the road is just some bizarre-looking sandstone structures that I've seen people camping there quite a bit now, I assume just to do the rock climb.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that – I think I might know that area. There's also an area over there, Russ, to the west near the plateau – that has a knob there, a hill that's just covered in dinosaur prints. Right. And
that could be.
That's really cool.
Yeah. There's just so much to explore out there. I've been out there and camped out there, but the times we've gone to Hole in the Rock, you got so much driving to do, you need a motel to come back to to recompose yourself.
We should interject here that Bob did not drive down the Hole in the Rock.
He got to the water on this trip.
Yeah. He came in from the lake.
Yeah, I came from the other side, which made it a much shorter trip to get there.
Yeah, so Hole in the Rock would be something that you did sort of as an offshoot of other planned trips down there? Or, I mean, for somebody coming from the northern part of the state.
Yeah, you know, from coming down from the northern part of the state, I would set up your trip to stay in Escalante. There's a lot of great places to stay there and eat. And you could make it a day trip or go camping along the way. Well, I have a lot of friends who'll go down to the end of the road past Dance Hall Rock and camp in that area and spend a couple of days there. Great dark sky area. You're going to see a really starry sky from that area. But yeah, you can spend several days there just hiking the slot canyons. And that's what a lot of people do when they go down the Hole in the Rock, is go to Spooky and Peekaboo, Zebra, Tunnel Slots. Yeah, Little Egypt and all those areas. It's just a great place for adventure.
Yeah. Mark, I'm going to guess from the picture you sent me that you've got quite a bit of information on this, or some information anyway, on your blog site.
We do at roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com. Come and take a look at that and see a variety of different pictures of that whole road and of that hole in the rock experience. Those people, they had this about 140 years ago.
Now, did you catch that play on words? The whole road.
I got it.
The whole road.
And if Dwayne Johnson were to get shot in a movie, you'd have a hole in the rock, right?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for
laughing. I didn't say that.
Thanks for laughing. I said in a movie.
Yeah,
I said in a movie. Yeah. The good news is we get one more round of it here with Bob and Mark. We'll take a quick break for news on the half hour. Come back and we'll talk more about Bob's experience on Lake Powell this past week. Don't go away. Mark, coming up.
a stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.